Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to this call. This is a call hosted by Hand in Hand Parenting called I Have to Leave Now, Helping Children with Separation Anxiety. And I'm really pleased you're all here. I'm Madeline Winter and I'm a Hand in Hand Parenting instructor and a parent coach based in Sydney in Australia. And I'm here today with my colleague Rebecca, who's a preschool director and lives in the San Francisco Bay Area in California in the US. And Rebecca will introduce herself later, but she's also a candidate for instructor certification with Hand in Hand Parenting, and she will shortly become certified with us. By the end of this teleseminar, we're hoping that you'll have got a picture of why your children may be struggling with feelings of being away from you, of how that shows up in their behaviour, because it doesn't always show up as just a big load of tears when you're leaving, although it does show up that way as well. And that you will have heard about some really practical things that you can do to start helping your child with separation feelings so that we can ease the stress of parting, at least for a little while. It tends to come and go. And we'd like to leave you with just some next steps if you would like to find out more about Hand in Hand or about this particular topic. So we have some hundreds of people registered for this call, and many of you will be listening to the recording. So welcome to each and every one of you. I'm so pleased you're here. I'm really glad that you're reaching out for help. Parenting was really just not something we were ever meant to do on our own, and it makes an enormous difference to do it in company and to have several people's minds on the project of figuring out us and our families. And we'll get to the guts of the topic shortly, but while people are gathering, I just want to give you a little bit of information about Hand in Hand Parenting, the organisation, and this approach to parenting. And then I'll just outline how the call will go. So Hand in Hand Parenting was started by Patty Whitzler over 25 years ago in Palo Alto. But there are now instructors that you can find all over the world. It's a relationship focused approach which puts attention on your relationship with your child as a dynamic and continuing thing with a history and with what's happening now, and we seek to understand the ups and downs of parenting and the joys and the challenges from the perspective of it being an ongoing relationship. And there are really four really important ideas at the core of this approach. And the first is that children need connection. Our brains actually don't function well unless we have a very deep sense of being connected to other human beings. And when young people feel connected, they can confidently go out into the world knowing that they'll come back together with us. They can make friends, they can solve problems, they can respond flexibly to the situation they find themselves in. And they can enjoy what they're doing without being sort of preoccupied with worries about being away from us. And we offer a number of listening tools to help build connection. Particularly some play-related tools, great for building a child's sense of connection with you. The second important piece of information is that, or perspective we have, is that when children go off track, when their behaviours are what I would call unworkable, there's sort of not right behaviours and wrong behaviours, I don't think. I think there's behaviours which are workable and behaviours which are unworkable, and those will change and shift. But when children are doing things that are unworkable, what's happened is they actually have lost their sense of connection with you or with whoever it is that's, you know, their important person at that moment. And in order to meet them and move things forward, we'll need to find a way of connecting with them at that point. The third thing is that we understand that limit setting, warm, gentle, firm, but loving and sometimes playful limit setting is a really absolutely key to getting children back into connection and back into good functioning. So we have ways of playing that are about giving children lots of room, but then we understand that limit setting needs to be part of what you do, and you can do it in a way that builds your relationship with your children. And the fourth insight that we have to offer is that offering warm limits and deep connection with our children is actually really hard for most of us to do. We need support. We need emotional support for the deeply demanding work of parenting. And hand-in-hand parenting offers a couple of listening tools, a listening process in a group, which is one of my very favourite things to do, and the listening partnership, which is a timed, mutual, reciprocal turn-taking of listening to one another. And it turns out to really be effective in building ongoing support for yourself. So building and maintaining and repairing your relationship with your child is the focus of this approach to parenting. And from listening to thousands of parents and thousands of children, we've come to understand that children and adults accumulate emotional tensions, and it's those that usually contribute to a sense of broken connection. And in some ways, you might call our approach trauma-informed. That sounds like really serious, but what it actually means is that the early struggles we have and the emotional tensions that we accumulate affect our behaviour, and our behaviour can be understood in terms of what's happened to us. And what Hand in Hand offers are some very practical ways of healing from the places where people have accumulated emotional tension and it's sending their behaviour off track. So the way that we're going to structure this call, right now you're all on lecture mode, which just cuts out the background noise. Rebecca and I have a few things that we'd like to share with you, some thinking that we have about the challenge of separation. And then towards the end of the call, we're hoping to offer you a bit of time to ask some questions. We probably won't get through all of your questions, but there are places that you can go to get more help. Our business is to offer you opportunities to get help. So, Rebecca, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit?
I'd love to. Hello, everyone. My name is Rebecca. I'm so happy to be here. I am the mother of a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old girl. I've been an educator in the state of California for 17 years, teaching preschool through high school at different times. And I'm currently the director of a parent cooperative nursery school in the Bay Area. I came to Hand in Hand as a teacher in order to better help the parents at my preschool, and found much to my delight that it had very, very much to offer me as a parent personally, and it's been such a pleasure to bring these tools into my family and to the families at my preschool.
Oh, cool. Thank you. And I have been using these tools for a long time, and was lucky enough to stumble across them way before I was a parent, and did a whole bunch of experimenting on other people's children, and then had my own. My daughter is 12, and we've been using these tools from the beginning. And I was inspired to start teaching it, partly as a way of building support around myself in my parenting, but also because my daughter clearly understood this process and didn't have to go off to a class or listen to a teleseminar in order to understand it. And I found that just deeply moving, and have wanted to share it with other parents. So the main points that we want to make today are principally that your child can take the gift of your love with them as they confidently go out into the world, and that you really are the best person to provide the closeness and the listening and the connection that your child needs or your children need to be able to do that. And we've kind of broken this down into a number of sort of thoughts, which I'll outline now, and then we'll talk a little bit more about each of them. But we wanted to communicate that feelings of separation are normal, and all children have them. Some children show them more than others, but pretty much every child will have, you know, some feelings about being away from you. The second thing is that it doesn't always look like it's about separation, that feelings, hard feelings about sadnesses about being away from you can show up in all sorts of behaviours. The third thing is that children have big feelings about little things, and big hurts can hook on to little opportunities, and this is a really healthy thing and something that as parents we can take great advantage of, although we often feel a bit hijacked by it. The fourth thing is that feelings of separation tend to wax and wane. They come and go depending on what's going on in a child's life, and that's quite normal. Feelings of separation are actually a brand of feelings of fear. And we know quite a lot within Hand in Hand about working with young people around fears. And those fears can be from something that's happened in the present. You know, you are right now having to leave your child. But they will also be about earlier experiences and that from which your child has accumulated some emotional tension, some kind of hurt, and those experiences get pulled up by things that are happening now. And it's really important to understand that something that's presenting now as a problem now may well actually be really about something that happened quite a long time ago. So Rebecca, would you like to have a bit of a chat about separation feelings for children?
Yeah, thank you, Madeline. You know, all children, like you said, are going to feel feelings, big or small, about separation, and it's very, very normal. Children's minds and adults' minds are wired in a way that we work best when we have a strong sense of connection to those around you. And for children, that sense of connection is easily broken. It can be broken by something as small as a mother answering the telephone and averting her attention from her child. And it certainly can be welled up by being left by a parent in a new setting. And sometimes we're not even aware that this sense of connection has broken. But when your child is getting upset about something, it's a pretty good sign that they have lost that sense of connection. So parenting is inevitably this constant process of breaking connection and reconnecting, and breaking connection and reconnecting with our children. And some children show it in a very obvious way. Some children will cry for mommy when she's walking away. But some children will not. And instead they will be left at school, and they may show that loss, that lack of connection, in such ways as withdrawal. You know, you might come to pick up your child from school, and the teacher will tell you, well, you know, she really just kind of sat by herself today a bit, and she wasn't really playing much with the other children. And that can be because of a child's anxiety at separation and the lack of connection they're feeling when you've left. Sometimes it'll also show up in aggression. Aggression is often the outward behavior reaction to fear, and having separation anxiety can make a child somewhat fearful. And while they don't show it to you and worrying that you're leaving, it may show up in other ways being acted out as aggression while away.
And one of the other ways that it commonly shows up is around struggles with sleep. And I don't know if we'll have time to talk at much length here about sleep in particular. You know, when children experience sleep as a separation, and either feelings will start to come up around the prospect of having to go to bed, or they'll wake up grumpy. And in my experience, that's often about feelings that have come up while asleep, and that sense of being away from you, as well as often sometimes that they're anticipating being away from you. Feelings of fear can also bubble up during sleep, and can often be, not always, but can often be what wakes children. So often, if people come looking for solutions around sleep, one of the things that we'll need to look at is some feelings that might be there about separations. It's really common for children who are carrying a really heavy load of feelings to choose really small things to have big upsets about. I think this is because often the early experiences that might have set a child up to be carrying a lot of fear may be such things as a hard birth, or separation from you after birth, or medical crises, you know, that have happened in the period early in their life, or some tension that was going on in your family. Some of those things are just way too big. A child won't actually have words to describe those. But they're there as a set of feelings. And often children will pull up those feelings that children don't want to be carrying around, those feelings, and they'll pull them up. They'll look for opportunities to pull them up, and it looks like the problem is that they have to leave now, or it looks like the problem is that they don't want orange juice, they want apple juice, or it looks like the problem is that they want the blue ball, not the red ball, or they want their sister's toy. But actually, the real emotional pressure is coming from much earlier experiences in their life. And I can tell a little story about my daughter who had, grandma had given her a special teddy bear to come and visit us while grandma moved house. And one day, my daughter came into the room and said to me, completely out of the blue, I remember I was cooking dinner, and she said, "Grandma's gonna want Purple Bear back." And I remember thinking, oh, you know, Grandma's not gonna want, if you want Purple Bear, you can just say that, you know, Purple Bear would like to stay with us. And then I thought, actually, she's wanting to work on feelings of loss. And at the time, and this is often the case, at the time she was just starting school. So she was leaving preschool, she was going into school, and, you know, it was a big, you know, it's a huge transition in a child's life, and there's a whole lot of separation experiences contained in that. And so I said, instead of saying, reassuring her and saying, oh, Grandma, we'll give you the bear if you want it, what I said was, ah, sweetheart, Purple Bear might have to go back to Grandma. And then she burst into tears and had just a huge cry. And we'll talk a little bit later about this process, which is called stay listening, where we decide not to try and fix the problem, but we actually just stay and listen to a child who's upset. And it's a hugely useful thing to do. She had a big cry about Purple Bear, and I would just keep saying gently, Purple Bear might have to go back to Grandma. And then after a while, you know, she seemed to be finished and toddled off to do something else, and Purple Bear never came up again. He still lives in our house. but, you know, it wasn't about Purple Bear. It was about all of the other things that are going on for her at that time. Rebecca.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about how feelings of separation can come and go with children. They can wax and wane. You may drop your child off the first time at school, and he or she looks over his shoulder and says, bye-bye, Mama, and starts to play. And you might think, oh, I'm in the clear. This is fine. She's totally comfortable. And then you may find that a month later, 3 months later, the feelings about the separation start to come up. You may find that your child is having a very hard time being left by you. You work on it, you plan on it, you take care of this emotional project, and things get better. And again, you think, we're in the clear on this. We've really come through this to the other side. But then something can shift. It might be that your child has shifted developmentally. It might be that some outside force in the child's life has come up. Separation, moving, an illness. And those kinds of things can re-trigger those feelings of anxiety about separation in your child. So I think it's important for parents to remember that this can be an ongoing project to work with your child on. And they will have times when it's good and they will have times when it's bad. And those times may wax and wane as the process goes on.
And those feelings are often what we would call, sometimes we refer to it as a child's emotional backpack, that they're carrying around a bunch of feelings which have accumulated over time, sometimes about quite hard things, you know, things that you knew and can guess would probably be a challenge. And sometimes, you know, there's no accounting for we forget what the world looks like from a young person's perspective and how hugely, you know, demanding a constant process of new experiences is on a human being, because we've got so much information about the world and we know so much about it. And, you know, as an adult, we're so rarely walking into a situation where we know nothing about what's going to happen now. That will pull up big feelings for a child, but those feelings are often about earlier experiences.
And parents are really the best people to help their children get through these projects, help them unload these emotional backpacks. The parents are the ones that children are connected to, and they are the ones who can help children recover. When our children have these heavy loads of feelings, they can go off track or display unworkable behaviors in many different ways. But in the safety of the connection with the parent, they will start that process of healing. This outward expression will often look like crying, sweating, tantruming, and even laughing, because this is the way that the children are innately wired to heal from their emotional pain. Tears and sweat both contain high levels of stress hormones. So when our children are expelling the things. It is not the hurt itself. It is the healing from the hurt. And tantrums are how we release our frustration. All of these things, the sweating, the big movements, shaking, even screaming, they are part of the healing process that a child uses to get out of this anxious place. And when a person moves in to stop that process, they're not stopping the hurt. They are actually stopping the healing, and it can serve to drive that hurt underground.
Yes, fears in particular have a way of sort of, I call it snowballing, use all these technical terms, but they're sticky. And so if we don't have the opportunity to help a child when we first get the sense that they're struggling with something, often it kind of gets worse. So some friends of mine, for instance, their daughter is really, really, well, was always really, really scared of cats. You know, something about her early life, she kind of plastered that feeling onto cats. And she came here for a play once, and we've got a cat, and it just spent, we spent the whole time trying to manage the process of where the cat was. She wasn't able to play. She was so concerned about it. And I was talking to her dad recently, and he said that what they'd noticed, I haven't had a chance to talk to them in detail about this process. What they'd noticed was that she'd started to get scared about dogs now. And then he told me that they can't eat out in public anymore. They can't go to a cafe or restaurant and eat out in the open because she's become deeply afraid about birds, that birds will come down and take her food or pet. And it's like, I thought, gee, it's a perfect example of how fears are sticky, and they will accumulate other experiences and sort of stick to them, and then there's more and more opportunities for those feelings to get pulled up by things that remind children of that earlier experience. And fears can be really, really effectively worked on playfully, and we may have some time to talk about that, but if we don't, I will direct you to some information about using laughter. But the short version is any laughter-filled play where young people are in charge, where they're getting to laugh and you follow their laughter and you don't take over the play, but you watch very carefully for what makes them laugh and how they can have a sense of being in charge while in that kind of play, it's hugely valuable for generally cleaning off feelings of fear. So when we're coming to dealing with a child's feelings about separation, these feelings are in the category of what I would call an emotional project in general. Sometimes you're lucky and a child, you know, is showing that they're sort of worried about an impending separation, and you manage to figure out how to help them have a good cry about it, and then they're confident from there on forward. But in general, these feelings are ones that, as we say, come and go, or you may find yourself in a period where they're really up, that they're getting to the point where you can't manage to work around them anymore, and you really need to be dealing with them head on. And I'm a great fan of, you know, as a parent, I only have one child, and I'm do it if you have to. So, you know, by all means, try workarounds. What you'll find with them when your children are having big feelings and you're having to kind of manage the situation around those big feelings is it gets to a point where it's just not manageable anymore, where it's just getting too much in the way of what needs to happen or of your child's good functioning. And what I've found then is that that's when I get motivated to organise things to do something about it. And the great thing, I love working on separation anxiety with families because it's something which is really predictable. You can plan for it. You can actually make a connection plan and put in place some things that will help your child get to those feelings at times other than the point of actually having to leave. It's really not hard to pull up feelings of separation. All you have to do is make it look like you're going to leave. And then you have this wonderful opportunity as a parent to give your child a hand with the feelings there. And you can organize to do that sometimes when you have the time and not kind of be hijacked about it. So you can plan, and when you plan, what you'll be doing is looking for ways to increase the sense of connection in your relationship with your child. And then what you will be thinking about moving to is a process that we call the long goodbye. So it's a process where you bring your child's attention to the fact that leaving's going to happen. You propose to leave. And then when you get that right, what will happen is your child will start to show their feelings about you leaving. And at that point, you'll need to listen. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. At some point in this process, and you may need to do this over and over again, you will need to leave. And part of what I want you to go away with today is a clear sense that it's okay to leave. I've been trying to dig it up and I can't find it, but somewhere I read something that said that children's base levels of stress hormones are lower in children who've had the experience of their parents leaving and then coming back, if that's the way leaving happens, than children whose parents who actually don't much get the opportunity to be away from their parents. So sometimes we put off leaving in order to, you know, try and because we're worried our child won't be happy without us. But children actually do well when we leave, if we can help them with the feelings that come up around that. And the feelings that come up around us leaving are going to be feelings which probably will be holding our children up in a number of different places. Separation anxiety is so easy to work on, and the bonus is that you will get you may find all sorts of other things ease up. So we do need to leave, and it's just fine to do that. One thing I would say, in case I forget later, it's always important to tell your child that you're leaving. It's not useful to sneak away. And Rebecca, put a little bookmark there, because probably as a preschool teacher, you've seen that happen, and you might have some things to observe about that.
Yes, absolutely.
And then once we've left, when we come back, we need to reconnect with our children. That will be very important, and we'll talk about a listening tool that we have called Special Time that is, I just think it's the most efficient way to build connection with our children, particularly while they're young, really young, like under 10. And then what you want to do as part of your connection plan around separations is understand what I call the gift of little upsets. So you will have lots of opportunities to listen. If your child's in the middle of an emotional project and you have made sure that there's enough of a deep sense of connection between you and them, and special time will help you do that, your child may find lots of opportunities to be upset, and you can confidently listen to those upsets when you have time and know that it is draining the total bucket of emotional tension that's feeding big feelings about separation. And in order to do all of this well and consistently and with a sense of joy rather than a sense of dread, you'll need to get support for yourself. Cool. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about the planning process. I think there are a couple of things that tell me a person is a parent. They're the defining characteristics of the parent brain. And one of them is worry. We parents worry. There are good reasons to be worried, but I think we also just get into a place where we get a bit stuck around worry. And the other thing is that we hope that what has happened every other time isn't going to happen this time. I think it's this fundamental optimism of parents. and that's something, it's an Achilles heel for us. When your child is having difficulty around something and it's showing up over and over, it's worth noticing what it is that's happened just before that upset, what the circumstances are, what pulls up their difficulty. And you might want to spend some time just taking some notes if it's not obvious to you what the pattern is, but there'll be a pattern. And once you have a pattern, you can plan for how you're going to tackle it. And instead of launching out without enough time to listen to the inevitable upset that your child's going to have about, say, being put in the car seat, which may be how their separation feelings are showing up, you can leave yourself enough time that you will be able to do a bit of special time, do a bit of playing, or listen to an upset without feeling really anxious about time. So planning is really important around this. And it also means that you can set up opportunities to listen to your children about their feelings about you leaving at times when actually you're not under pressure to leave. And that will stand you in very good stead. But Rebecca's going to talk a little bit about the process of connecting in our relationship with our children.
Yeah, thank you, Madeline. One of the most effective ways we can establish a strong sense of connection in our children when we are going to leave them somewhere wonderful and safe, is through a tool that we call special time. I have seen really fantastic benefits from the parents I've worked with who have used special time in this way. And special time is a one-on-one time where it is you and your child without distractions. Your cell phone is off. You are not answering the telephone. You are not chatting with your partner. And there are no distractions. And you announce it. You make sure that the child knows that this is now happening. We are in special time. And you time it. You use a timer because it's impossible to sustain that level of attention ongoing. So you tell, it's just as much for yourself as it is for your child to know that during this period of time, I'm going to be absolutely focused on you. And the child is in charge. You don't have your own agenda of what to do. You are really doing whatever your child wants to do, and you endeavor to do it with utter delight. My children, when they were younger, were still doing special time at 9 and 11, and when they were younger, they used to love to play Barbies with me during special time, and they would I never got to choose what my Barbie said. My child would say something and then she'd tell me what my Barbie was supposed to say. And it wasn't very much fun for me, but my job was just to be so in love with playing Barbies with my daughter at that moment. And this really builds a lot of emotional safety. We had a child recently at our preschool, I'll call him Joshua, who was having just a really difficult time, not only being left at school, but being separated from his mother at all. He did not want to go to his father. He did not want to go anywhere. He did not want to be anywhere where his mother wasn't. And on the occasions that she had to leave him at school, it would usually be a process of me kind of pulling this octopus off of her body while he was just expressing extreme upset. And
Rebecca. Oh, we've encountered a technical glitch. Rebecca's for some reason dropped off the line. I will leave her to drop back in with the rest of that story, where what Rebecca did was get the mum to do a lot of special time with Joshua. Special time is extraordinary, and I could spend a whole teleseminar talking about special time, but it really deeply gives a sense for your child that you care about them, that you are there for them, that they have been seen. That will then mean that at the times when you need to bring a limit, and leaving a child is effectively bringing a limit. They want you to stay and you are going to go. When you're bringing a limit, then there's a lot more emotional safety that will allow a child, if the feelings are there, to go really deeply and efficiently into them. They just need to know that we're on their side, because sometimes when they're going to those hard places, it's easy for them to feel like we're not. So once you've built the connection of, you're back again, Rebecca.
I am.
Finish that story.
Yeah. Where did I leave off?
You were with Joshua, and he'd been having big feelings about her leaving, and I think you were just about to get to the special time bit.
Oh, I missed the best part.
I know.
So, what this mother decided to do was to triple the amount of time that she was spending getting ready in the morning. And that allowed her to do a couple of things. It allowed her to not be stressed about the amount of time and getting him out the door. And it allowed her the opportunity to offer him, she was offering him half an hour of special time every morning before school. And she did this for an ongoing time, several weeks, in fact. And what this did was it really built up Joshua's sense of connectedness to her, his sense of safety and security and confidence. And it worked wonders. Joshua's been coming to school and saying bye-bye to mama. And I've seen special time work in this way again and again. It's a fantastic tool to use when your child is feeling separation anxiety.
Mm. And sometimes when your children are having struggles, just furnishing connection, just either squeezing in a bit of special time, if somehow the child's gone off track. And what they'll do after a while is start to ask for special time when they can tell that something's not right. So it begins to empower your children to do something other than pull the cat's tail or bop their big sister when they can tell they're in trouble. And you don't always have to do special time when they ask for it. In fact, you would be exhausted if you did. But it tells you they need connection. And sometimes just furnishing connection is enough to have a child be able to do a reset and handle what it is that needs to be handled. But sometimes they need more help. And around separations, what it is you're going to need to do is bring, having built and filled up their cup of connection, what you're going to need to do is bring their attention to the fact that you're going to leave. And you really want to try to organize this so that you have the time to listen. So you propose to leave. And your object or your aim here is to get to the point where a child is releasing the stored up feelings about you leaving. And it turns out that a child can often feel those most deeply when they're still in connection with you. But if they're on top of you, they can't feel it at all. So it's this interesting process of just getting enough distance between you and your child that they can feel that you're leaving, but you're not actually gone. What happens often when you actually go, and I worked in a preschool for a while, and it was a really interesting process of seeing the difference between my perspective on it when I was leaving my daughter as a parent and what I noticed happened when I was working, when I was there as a worker watching the process with other parents. Often a child will be very upset initially, and then once you leave, they usually, many children, not all, will pull themselves together one way or another, and some of them are able to stop being upset and get on and enjoy really happily the environment that they're in. What's going on there is not that they've stopped having the feelings, but that it's not safe enough for them to stay with those feelings. And what you want to do is set up some opportunities where your child really does feel safe to stay there with those feelings. So you propose to leave and you don't leave. you sort of hold it there at the point where the child is able to have an upset about it. So this can be done particularly well with someone else, either a childcare worker or teacher that you've set up and can agree that you're going to do this with, or if you have someone else that your child is really close to, a grandparent, a friend, or maybe your parenting partner, you can have the child with one of those people holding them as you propose to leave. And we did a lot of this when my daughter was little. She'd be with my husband and I'd say I was going to leave, and initially that would be enough to bring up the feelings. She'd cry for a while at that spot, and then what would happen is it would sort of dry up. So I would then need to do the next thing in the process, which was she was under two, so she didn't have a lot of words that she could say, but she understands how the world works, and she knows that when I go to get my car keys, that that's the next step in the process of leaving. So I would go to get my car keys, and that would bring up another big lot of feelings, and we'd sort of stay there for a while, and I would say, sweetheart, I'm sorry, but I have to go. We say five words or less when you'll stay listening like this. You really just want to provide an opportunity for the feelings to come up. You don't want to be trying to explain anything or reason with your child at this point. When they're in the middle of this upset, their prefrontal cortex, the part of their brain that can remember that you're coming back, isn't working. Can remember that, you know, you've done this before, isn't working. What they're flooded with is deep feelings of sadness about you leaving. And you can stay there. Recently, I was talking with another certification candidate who's got smaller children, and the point that really brought things up for her boy was when she put the alarm on when they were leaving the house. And she described for me this process where she put the alarm on, he would go into another one, and then it would back off, then she would turn the alarm off because she didn't want it to go off, and he would cry for a while, and then it would sort of back up. So then she would turn the alarm on again, you know, because they need to do that before they're going to leave. She'd left herself plenty of time and she did that several times, because each time she turned the alarm on, it pulled his attention to the fact that they were going to have to leave. So you can do it in all sorts of ways. Rebecca, you will have done a lot of listening to children.
Yeah.
Parents are leaving. Are there any other things you'd say about the listening process?
It's been so freeing to let go of the need to stop the crying. You know, so you are there and you offer your warmth and you offer your safety. And it's you just let the child have all of his or her feelings without any need to try to distract or move on or get it under control. And that expression that the children have of just really getting all those cries out about their sadness at mommy leaving, they come to this other place on the other side of it, where, you know, you're just kind of this release, and then their behaviors often become much more workable and much more engaged. So that stay listening and just being able to warmly offer the space for them to have their full feelings is so helpful to the children in this process. It can be hard, though. It can be very hard to remain warm.
That's right. And that's the thing. I'd like to open up the call shortly for questions. So if you have a question, you can press *2 and your little hand will come up, and we'll do our best to answer those calls in the order that your hand comes up. And just to say that that process of listening can be hugely demanding on people. I know a dad who's been using these tools a really long time, and he's used them with for himself. He understands it very deeply. But every time his daughter gets upset, you know, it plunges him into some feeling of deep panic. He really gets scared. And so if you're new to these tools, you will probably notice that you have quite a lot of feelings when your children get upset. Those feelings that I think are about the places where we're overwhelmed as parents, and we didn't get listened to as young people. So in order to do this with our children and keep thinking in the face of their wild feelings or their odd behaviours, we're going to need to find somewhere where we can get listened to ourselves about how it feels. The other thing, so we teach something called a listening partnership, where you take turns listening to one another for a certain amount of time, and you make an agreement to keep everything that's said there confidential. You can use that listening time in all sorts of ways. One of the things you can do with it is think through what it is, where it is your child's consistently getting upset, and use the attention of another adult to think through how you might develop your connection plan around that particular emotional project. But you'll find that there are places where you just need to scream about how you don't want to hear another sob, or, you know, you just wish you could get out the door without a hassle. And being able to sort of complain about that and be listened to by someone who understands the situation that you're in and cares about you and knows that you can figure this out, it makes a huge difference to be able to keep going back again. So probably we might stop on that note. We've got a couple of people who put their hands up. Elizabeth, I'm just going to unmute you. Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, great. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm going to try and keep this brief. So I have a son who's almost four, and he's about to start his second year of preschool. He's been there for a year. However, he did what's called toddler and little school there for a year before that. So he's been there for about 2 years. He has a really hard time separating. As you mentioned, like, it may be a month where he's doing fine. I think, oh, this is going great. And then all of a sudden it's just bad. The separation usually starts in the morning before we actually leave the house. And what I find is that, you know, in the morning, I'm trying to get us out the door, trying to get him ready, myself ready, lunch together and everything. So my husband ends up spending a lot of time with him. However, I'm the one who always drops him off at school, so I'm not really spending the time with him in the morning. So he may start saying, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to go to school. And we sometimes put him in the car, and he's, you know, screaming and yelling and crying. And I just listen to him. And I say, I know you really don't want to go to school. You really don't want to go to school. You know, and, you know, I use the empathy and understanding for a while. And then when he starts to kind of calm down, I'll say, you know, but today's a school day, and this is just what you do. And anyway, then we get to school, and then the separation, you talked about the octopus arms, that usually happens when we're there. So, you know, I'm one. And usually when we get to school, I'll tell him I'm going to be leaving in 5 minutes. I'm very specific about where I'm going, you know, so he has an idea, like a visual almost. And then, you know, mommy always comes back. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, I'd say 75% of the time, the teacher has to pull him off of me, and he's grabbing and everything. Mm-hmm. So I guess, I kind of have my own answer, but as far as, you know, in the morning, I just need to allow more time at home and kind of start the process maybe earlier and, you know, I guess maybe spend more special time with him. I mean, I do special time with him. I usually do 10 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, maybe I just need to devote more special time every morning with him. Or any tips? he's extremely stubborn. You know, he is very strong will. He's not one of those, he won't hold back his crying. He's really, you know, he's, the teachers are kind of amazed at his stamina. I mean, he can just go and go and go. But, you know, generally he'll do that for 5-10 minutes and then he's okay. So, you know, he's attached. He's attached to myself and my husband. He's attached to my husband a lot too. Like it's both of us for sure.
So, I think it sounds like you're doing fine. You know, just some children have bigger loads than others around this. And do you have a listening partner?
I don't, but I have some, I've got some really great, great friends and, you know, we don't set aside that, you know, once a week where we, you know, I share with her for 30 minutes, she shares with me, but it may be like a daily thing, you know, I just have a really good network, I feel.
You may want to
I don't per se have a listening partner.
You may want to choose someone who, of those people that you already can tell they can listen, and and set up something that's just a little bit more formal than you probably get to do in your conversations with them at the moment. And the reason that you might want to just make it more formal is there's a way that we need – you're up against something which you've been at for a long time. You've got some quite, you know, understandably quite a lot of feelings about – the whole thing yourself, and you
I'm
need
feeling so anxious about this year.
Yeah, that's
I'm like,
right.
I don't think I can do a whole another year of dropping.
Yeah,
off.
That's right. That's right. And the first place to start is while you're carrying that, it's actually getting in the way of your capacity to be flexible and respond in the way that he needs. And so once you've been at something like this for a while, you really need somewhere where you can go in an organized way and talk about all of the ways you feel and know that the thing about putting a frame around it, it's very similar to the frame we put around special time. You know that they're not going to take you seriously, as in they're not going to assume that the way you feel now is the way you're always going to feel, or that you're not able to deal with, you know, the problem of your son's separation. They're not going to make judgments about you based on what it is you say inside of this listening time. And even in the best of friendships, unless we set up that agreement very explicitly, there's a little worry in the back of our brain that it isn't actually safe for us to show stuff. And we really do need to set up some places where we can really show how hysterical the whole thing makes us feel. So that's the first thing I'd say. And the second is, it sounds like you're on the right track. I don't know if he's doing special time with his dad. I cannot speak highly enough of special time, named, timed, even just 5 minutes. I haven't got time here to talk about why, in detail, why you name it and why you time it, but it's very useful. If you can find a few minutes every morning to do some special time with him. But the other thing is around slowing it all down. So if you can organize, especially around the beginning of the school year, even when they're going back the second time, and I remember big separation feelings for my daughter the second year of preschool. And I remember thinking, this is great. I know she's going somewhere she absolutely loves to be. She's got deep connections with the people there. So the feelings she's having now are not about where she's going to. They're accumulated feelings about where she's come from. And that's not always so clear to us when we're working on separation. So you've got a lovely opportunity here. I don't have time to go into what the early story is, but, you know, there may be really clear reasons why he's carrying bigger feelings about separation. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter that much. It's like each child is what they are and each project is what it is. But it sounds like you're actually doing well, but finding a way to slow it down a bit in the morning probably will help.
Okay. Yeah. Listening partner, can you get one through the hand in hand?
You can, which is a good opportunity for me to just talk about where you might there are a couple of other callers which I hope we might get to, but I might just move.
Thank
Rebecca,
you.
Would you have anything else to say about that question?
No, I think that she's absolutely on the right track, and I know how hard it is to leave your crying, clinging child at school. It is so hard, and I think that getting support for yourself would be a fantastic step and enable you to be more open to connection at those times. And I know that mornings can be really tough, and when we are stressed and we are trying to move out on our way as fast as we can to get everything ready and get our lunches made and go out the door, the children can pick up on those feelings.
Oh, yeah.
And add to that feeling of anxiety about this mm-hmm. impending separation. So, you know, doing things like making the lunch the night before, getting up a little bit early so that you can be present, be relaxed, offer mm-hmm. whatever amount of special time you can before you go, I think will probably help.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Mm. Yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
And I think what we'll do, Rebecca, is let's just do the next bit of the call, which is just making sure that we've talked to people about what your next steps might be. And then I would be happy to answer. There's three people with their hands up for questions. So I'd be happy to answer those questions, but it means that people can hop off the call since it's only meant to be an hour here together. They may well just stop the recording here. You can listen to this call if you want to listen again, or if you want to share it with a friend, it will be posted. You'll get an email with a link to a recording of the call if you registered for the call, and it will be posted on the Hand in Hand Parenting website as well shortly. So if you are wanting to learn more about Hand in Hand, and I'll talk in a little moment about the particulars of listening partnerships, but there are a number of ways you can get involved. I highly recommend, if you're fairly new to Hand in Hand, that you join the Parent Club, and we'll send you a link to that. It's a marvellous program that my colleague Kathy Gordon has really done a heap of work on. It involves getting a weekly email which will have a really pithy bit of video or audio or something to read on particular topics. It's very bite-sized, and then you join a classroom where you get to be part of there's a discussion area, and then every week there's a Q&A call, which is a place where you can go and learn heaps from the questions other people ask, but also get to ask your own questions. I forget what it is. You can buy it annually or on a monthly thing, but I just think it's just perfect. Most of us, just need little bits of information and then need somewhere where we can go and ask questions. And that Parent Club really meets that need. If you're wanting to learn a bit more in detail about this approach, and in particular, if you want to join with a group of other parents and have the opportunity to get to know one another and listen to each other's stories and learn to listen to each other's stories, I would recommend joining either the starter class, or we're just about to start another parent intensive, which is probably my favourite instructor-led course. The Parent Intensive goes for 10 weeks. The Starter Class goes for 6. They're very similar in what it is that you'll cover, but I just find that extra 4 weeks with this little group of parents that you meet on the phone, you get to ask your questions and you get listening time, facilitated listening time, so you learn about the listening process. That extra 4 weeks that you get in the Parent Intensive really makes a difference to building connections with the other parents. And it's often out of those courses that people will pick up a listening partnership. It's like it can be quite a brave venture to go out there looking for a listening partnership. And you will probably need to have a few goes at it until you find someone. What we find the thing that makes the difference is simply that your schedules coincide. But you get a look at people when they're on a course with you, and you get a sense of whether you're going to be able to make a workable listening partnership with them. So I would highly recommend the Parent Intensive, which starts in a couple of weeks. I think there's 3 different call groups, so you could have a look and see if there's a time that will work for you. You can always book a one-on-one consultation through Hand in Hand. And if you're another wonderful way to get across our approach, in particular how it applies to particular parenting challenges, is to sign up. They're only $39, which is about 55 or something Australian, for one of the Parent Rescue Squad courses. There's one on separations, which I've just reviewed, and it really is fantastic. There's one on handling aggression, sibling rivalry. There's a couple of others. They look at the hand-in-hand parenting tools from the perspective of that particular challenge, and we'll go into quite a lot of detail. They're self-guided. They roughly would take you about 3 weeks. They're broken up into little videos that you can watch at your leisure. And one of the great things about them is people often will work through them with a parenting partner. And if you combine those with one or two sessions with a one-on-one consultant, it can really make a difference to how you can, it'll help you develop a connection plan and work out how you're going to apply these things in your particular circumstance. People find they don't usually need very many consultations, sometimes just ones, enough to give you plenty to work on, but it's really focused on you and your family, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. It's a very efficient way to go about learning about hand in hand. So I think we've got to the end of our time. We're just a little over. So I will sort of formally close off this teleseminar. I'm happy to stay and just answer the questions for the people who have their hands up. But I can't stay longer than that. So if you have questions, consider joining the Parent Club. Book yourself a consultation, get yourself on a course. So, Rebecca, is there anything that you'd like to say in closing?
Yes. What is the group that we can direct parents to look for listening partners? I know that I've come through that group.
Okay. What I recommend is that you join the Hand in Hand Parenting Discussion Group, and we'll send out a link, but if you go to the Hand in Hand webpage, there's a series of things along the top of the screen, and I think it's called Blog and Community. If you go to Communicate with Parents Like You, you'll get a gorgeous picture of my very great friend, Rachel Schofield. Actually, that one takes you straight to the Yahoo discussion group, and you just click on the purple button there and say join group. Within the Yahoo discussion group, there's a database where you can put your details down and scroll through and see where there are other parents who are looking. Other good places to find listening partners are to join one of the Hand in Hand Parenting Facebook groups. There's one for parents of teens and preteens where I spend a fair bit of time, which is a lovely group, and there's a whole lot to understand about how these tools shift and change in how you apply them with older young people. But there's also a couple of Hand in Hand Facebook groups for folk who have younger children where people will often get to know someone there in that odd way that you do on Facebook and connect that way. So we'll send a link out so you can follow those links. I think you have to request them. Mm. Anything else you want to say, Rebecca?
Just thank you all so much for dialing in and being the wonderful, thoughtful parents that you are. It is, I think I speak for Madeline and myself when I say what a pleasure it is to work with you. Thank you.
Great. We'll just have a few seconds silence, and then I think someone, Elaine, and someone, anyway, let's do that, and then we'll answer your questions. Good. Okay. So they may include this and they may not include this in the recording, but they can finish it off there if they want to. Stay if you wish. There's a couple of questions which I'll try and answer now. One is from you, Elaine. I'll just unmute you. Are you there? Hang on, I unmuted the wrong person. There, Elaine.
Oh. Hi.
Hi.
There we go, perfect.
Yeah, perfect. Second time lucky.
Okay, perfect. I just have a quick question. You guys spoke towards the middle to end of the call about not distracting the child if they're, you know, crying or screaming or whatever it is, and kind of letting them deal with the emotions. And so I have a 21-month-old boy, and, I mean, overall, he's such a good kid, but there are times where he doesn't want to go in the car seat, or he doesn't want to get his diaper changed, or he's screaming for whatever reason. And what I have done in the past is kind of like distract and redirect. So is that not a good idea? Are there certain circumstances where that's okay and certain circumstances where I should kind of let him, you know, cry it out and kind of listen? And so I just wanted to see your recommendations around that.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca, what do you reckon?
Well, I know that we don't always have the time to stay listen. And sometimes we do just need to get into the car seat and go. And it's okay to give yourself permission to do that when it has to be done. But I think it's also it's such a good idea to do the stay listening when you have the opportunity to do so, because you know, you're really giving your child the opportunity to offload these difficult feelings and have the healing that comes from expressing these stress hormones. And you're also sending the message that all of your feelings are acceptable in you. They're, I think that when I think of because I also have a daughter who, you know, would burst into tears at the bakery because she couldn't decide which cookie she wanted. You know, like, how can you cry when I'm getting you a cookie? And her crying when it felt to me like it was something that, that wasn't a good reason to me to be crying, it irked me. And when I look back at that, you know, I'm pretty sure that the reason it irked me so much is because I was not given the space to cry as a child. You know, so many of us were raised in families, and I had a wonderful, loving family. And when I cried as a child, I was supposed to stop crying. And if I wasn't going to stop crying, I could go do it by myself in my room. And so crying became this thing that was in my heart fraught with tension and emotion, and when I saw it in her, I kind of had this urge to stop it, end it, make something else happen. And working through Hand in Hand, I think that when children are listened to, they learn that it's okay to have these difficult emotions. It doesn't have to be scary, and I don't have to stop it when I'm having these difficult emotions.
Makes so much sense. Now, even at that young age, I mean, he's 21 months, so I mean, it's still, you know, he's still really young, but I'm sure that they're understanding that, you know, mom is sitting here and listening and supporting me and loving me at this moment. I mean, that's what I would guess, right?
They have a really sophisticated limbic system in their brain that is always figuring out what the emotional states are of those around them. You know, it's amazing how good they are at feeling our emotions and picking up our emotions and making sure that they are connected to the people that they want to be connected to. So, yes, I absolutely think that they get that message even when they are babies.
Wow, that's so amazing. Okay, cool.
I would just add one thing, which I think this is probably the most useful piece of information that I was blessed to have through my experience with Hand in Hand coming to parenting, which is that consistency isn't vital. So We're not in the business of teaching our children how to be without us. They can be without us when they feel emotionally secure enough and they're not carrying a heavy load that's looking for every possible opportunity to unload on, if that makes sense. What we're wanting to offer our children, what we're wanting to do is build the emotional safety that means that when our children find something to express their upset about, they can do that easily and efficiently. And when they get to do that, their full mind will be re-engaged and they will be able to problem solve. They will be able to cooperate. They will be able to do what needs to be done if what you're asking of them is reasonable. But you don't have to do that full healing process every time a feeling crops up. Because you're not teaching them, it's not that they'll get the wrong idea if you bundle them into the car. I mean, the car seat is always such a challenge. But, you know, if you can explain and you're not upset and tense, you know, there are just sometimes when something has to happen and it's important, I think, for us to work on whatever gets in the way of us being gentle and loving and connected in the tone that we're using rather than distant and disapproving. Like so many of us had limits set with us where what was where at the core of the limit setting was distance and disapproval. And it's for some of us it's a real struggle not to have that tone come in whenever it is that we have to set a limit, particularly if we're under pressure. But so long as we can keep a tone of warmth, we don't have to stop and listen to this big load of tears every time for fear that they might get the wrong idea if we don't do it the same every time. What we do need to make sure we do is take the opportunities when they present themselves whenever we can. If you're consistently distracting, moving past the upset, shutting down the upset, then you're missing opportunities to help your child with something that's probably holding them up in a whole bunch of different ways. A huge part of their brain functioning will be clogged up with this heavy emotion. And if you, it's like children will send us signals in their behavior that they're having trouble. And if you ignore the signal regularly and consistently, all that happens is that the difficulty accumulates in its paralyzing effect on their capacity to think. So you want to be taking those opportunities when you can, but you don't need to feel anxious that you have to do it every time.
That's so powerful. I love that so much because that was also something that I had thought about. And like, I feel like I have to do the same thing over and over again, but I love that.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Yeah, no. And especially it's really, you know, lovely to know around the issue of separation. It's like when you have time, you do need to think about how you're going to make time. But when you have time, you can listen. And when you don't, you leave, you know, and know that you will have an opportunity later in the day to reconnect. And once you've reconnected, they may well pick a fight about whether it's peanut butter or whether it's honey. and that is, you know, you never really know what it's about, but you can trust it's about something important. And you may have time at peanut butter and jelly time to listen.
Wow, so powerful. Thank you so much.
Cool.
Thank
My
you for
pleasure.
The entire call. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And one call from someone, your number ends in 427. I actually think it's a New South Wales number. Hello? Oh, hang on. I think I, here we are. Sorry. I put your hand down, but I didn't unmute you. Hello.
Hi, Bronwyn.
I think, hi, Bronwyn. What was it you wanted to ask?
Oh, well, I have a few things now. First of all, I thank you for the information that you've given us on how to find listening partners. It's certainly one of the things, outcomes I wanted from this call was to find out how to do that. I have one listening partner, but I need actually probably about five.
Yes. Smart woman.
One listening partner is not always available, and you're right, they do need to have this schedule. I've also applied for a scholarship because we're on a disability pension, and I haven't heard back, and it was for a starter class, and so I'm wondering, does the Australian branch, Parenting by Connection, have concessions for disability pension and pensioners?
Is it Hand in Hand Parenting, www.handinhandparenting.org, there is a scholarship program. Hand in Hand is very generous, so
what I'm trying to say is I haven't heard back.
So you applied through handinhandparenting.org?
Yes.
Follow it up. I think just try admin@handinhandparenting.org. Or I think that's Elizabeth and you should get a response. Do follow it up and be reassured that Hand in Hand wants these tools to go to whoever needs them, and they're very generous with scholarships. Sometimes it'll be a part scholarship, but just follow it up, and if you don't if you don't get any joy, do ring them too. Not so straightforward from Australia, but these days really not impossible. There's usually someone in the office, and they'll return your call if they're not.
Well, I have written an ad in on the Facebook page, but I didn't know about the Yahoo discussion group list, so that was useful. Just as an aside too, listening to the getting children into car seats, I often wondered whether what I did was technically correct, but I always turned it into a game.
We didn't have a chance to, you're really smart, we didn't have a chance to talk about playlisting, which is one of the other sort of play-based listening tools, but it can be enormously powerful in resolving fears and stuck spots. And in fact, I did exactly the same. We had special time in the car. We did a whole lot of play listening around the car seat, and not a huge lot of big upsets. That the playing, where she got to be in charge and I had to sit in the car seat, and I didn't want to be strapped in, and she laughed and laughed and laughed. And that laughter is very powerful. So you're really smart to have figured out to do that.
I did one with like, oh no, what am I going to do? I won't be able to go home. I'll have to sleep here. The mozzies are going to bite me. Because we never got to tears, I just wonder if I somehow distracted her too much with the laughter. But,
well, we can do that, but I don't think we want to get preoccupied with tears. It's really helpful to understand that connecting play, particularly where there's laughter, tickling doesn't work. It needs to be play where the children are in charge. And that shifts mountains. It's not well understood how incredibly powerful a healing tool that is. So I don't think you want to get preoccupied with going after the tears. When there's enough safety, what you'll find is your child will pick an upset and it will break open into this huge pile of feelings, and it'll not always, but it'll kind of have a sense of looseness around it. If you have a feeling that your child is carrying some emotional tension, but you feel like they haven't got to it, I was advised step up the special time or step up the play listening. It seems an odd way round, but it's an absolutely necessary ingredient to having the safety, a sense of safety your child needs in order to get to deeper upsets.
I'm right there where what you've said. I'm right at that point, and that's why I need to step up the listening partnership so that I can do that. For me, the next step is listening partnerships so that I can step up the play listening. because I'm burning out.
Yeah. and what happens is we stop being able to think of something playful to do. But when we're in good shape, there's as many ways of getting laughter going as there are people on the planet. You know, probably, well, there's more. You know, everyone would have three ideas. But when we're backed up, we just can't think of anything. So do follow up the scholarship thing, because I think you're at the point where you'd really do, if you haven't already done a class, you'd get a whole lot out of that.
I haven't done a star class, but I've done the self-guided help your young children to sleep.
Yeah.
I've actually been working with these ideas for a number of years, but it's been really difficult for me to get online, so...
country thing. One of the things about the courses is that the contact with the live human beings is phone-based. So even if you're having trouble... even if you're having trouble getting online, you can just get on the phone. Bronwyn, can you, my email address is madeline.s.winter@gmail.com. It's probably somewhere other. If you didn't write that down and you find your way to my bio and the Hand in Hand webpage, you can follow the links and get in touch with me. Get in touch with me.
All right.
Cool.
I will, for the email.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah. All right, I'll do that. Thank you.
Good. We probably need to stop. Rebecca, is there anything you want to say?
Nope. I just am grateful to be here.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for hanging on for this extra bit of time. It's been lovely to spend time with you. Please keep in touch. Please join something where there's live human beings to talk to. I love to hear from people. Let me know what you thought. Let us know, you know, how it's going. We love to hear from you. So thanks very much for making the time to be here. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.